All righty, we are live. Hey there, Laker fans. Welcome to another episode of Lakers Detailed. I'm your host, Vinay, with my co-host, Raj. Raj, we've got a late one tonight. We were waiting to see the outcome of that Warriors-Kings game. Thought it'd be much closer. It wasn't. Keegan Murray decided to turn it on. And Keon Ellis, undrafted.
Yes.
Another one of those undrafted players. We love undrafted players because they always have something to prove. Have a great game. They beat the Warriors by double digits. I'm sure Warrior fans are, you know, up in arms about Steve Kerr getting fired and Draymond being ejected into the sun and Klay Thompson being banished from the Bay Area permanently. But those are their problems. The Lakers won a thriller today, Raj. Game, we were up double digits, and we decided to play the prevent offense in the fourth quarter, which was the bane of my existence because we've done that before and it's never worked out in our favor when we do that. But the Lakers, you know, made it through today with some timely shots at the end by LeBron, a huge three by D'Lo, some great playmaking from Austin, and some crucial free throws from Anthony Davis. Lakers are locked into the seventh seed. Raj, where are you at right now? We are now like two, three hours after that game. Where is your emotions? Where is your mind now?
A little bit of a high. I remember you just brought up the Warriors losing, and my only comment on that, Vinay, I went and looked this up. Draymond Green missed 21 games for non-basketball reasons. 21 games. He was suspended, or remember that weird thing away from the team that they were doing, and they were kind of creating their own suspension because the league was like, we're not dealing with this anymore. You handle this in-house, and however you handle it. And Draymond said he went to therapy and had crying conversations. Had crying conversations with Steve Kerr, and then I think 2 days later got another ejection. But in any case, those are the Warriors' problems. I think it's funny that, you know, it's funny or whatever, sad that you won't see Steph in the playoffs or whatever. But the Lakers are now the seventh seed. They play a team. Jimmy Butler had this quote, and I remember when they went up 3-0 on Boston, and then Boston went back and won the next three games. And he was on the podium. He's like, the universe is funny because they lost game 7 the year before, right, to Boston as well. So then, or was it 2 years ago? I forgot when it was. And he's like, the universe has a funny way of kind of making you fight the battles that you think you can run away from. It was kind of his kind of summary of that. And I feel like this year, the Lakers are now dominated the Pelicans in the first game. Second game, you knew New Orleans would come back and punch. You knew that, you know, Zion would kind of take it personally. Benching Brandon Ingram was definitely a choice that Willie Green decided to go with, and we can kind of get into that. But no, man, I think we're very fortunate to be the seven. I was at the Warrior game, Vinay, 2 weeks ago. Took my niece, who's a Steph fan, and AD missed the second half. The Warriors won that game, and the Warriors passed us. They had the tiebreaker, and we were 10, and they were 9, and it felt like this kind of colossal event, because it felt like there were just not enough games to catch up to the top of the West. We have caught all the way up. We are now the seventh seed. We will play next Saturday against a very good Denver team that's waiting for us. But I think I feel fortunate that, you know, we don't have – imagine we have to play the Kings on Friday. Like, imagine that's the situation we're in. So, no, I just feel fortunate that we're in this situation. And there's two ways to go at an opponent, Vinay. There's a walk – you know, in a scared manner, or they're running 100 miles per hour. And hopefully a team is running 100 miles per hour. How are you feeling? What's your synopsis so far of kind of how everything's played out? So
last
few days.
Yeah, I'm not shocked that the Lakers won today. I thought the Lakers actually did a really nice job. You know, the Pelicans came out punching first this game. And, you know, kind of as expected, they got throttled pretty bad the last game, and the Lakers were just kind of cruise control in the fourth quarter, but the Pelicans were trying to be the aggressor, you know, highlighted by Zion's 40 ball. I guess before we say anything, Zion was amazing today. He had like the first half, I think he had some issues where, you know, like he was getting stripped and he was just having some trouble. But that fourth quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter run was like all Zion. Nobody can guard him. Nobody can stay in front of him. Nobody can jump with him. Like the anomaly that he is, like I think, of every single person that touched the floor today, Zion was the best player on the floor. It sucks that the, you know, it's sort of an anticlimactic ending with him having to, looks like he had a hamstring injury.
Yeah.
He had to leave, but I thought the Lakers did a really nice job weathering the storm. The first quarter, they go down by almost double digits, I want to say. And then the bench group comes in. We get turnover, score, miss a shot, force a turnover, score again. And immediately, that 8-point deficit or 10-point deficit or whatever it was turns into a tie game. And I thought the Lakers did a really, really great job just getting back into the game. And then, you know, we went up. They cut it close. We went up again. Then they tied it up. And then, you know, we closed it out. But there's a couple themes from this that I wanted to discuss with you, Raj. I think it's something that it's worth discussing now because I think it's something that's going to happen. The tale of these two games, because it was two different games that we had, the first Pelicans game and then this one. The first one was, you know, our guards were kind of getting off. Like Bron was facilitating a lot off the extra help stuff. AD was doing the things that AD does, not having to do too much, but really focusing on the defensive part, rebounding. And our guards were doing really well. This game, the guards, like D'Lo was fantastic in the first quarter. He's the reason that we even had the game close. But for the most part, the guards weren't necessarily involved in the same way that they were the first game. And there was a lot of heavy amounts of Bron, just Bron doing different stuff. And defense doing different stuff. But the end result was different. The second half was a little bit different because the second half of that first win, the Lakers, everybody's relatively fresh because the guards have done so much heavy lifting in the first half. But in this one, we went with a very hunting mismatches, Bron, deliberate. ISO, deliberate the second half. That did not look good for almost all of the fourth quarter, I would say. Talk to me about the two differences in that, because I think that's going to show up in the playoffs. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's funny because I thought, honestly, Jose Alvarado changed the game. I thought his pace and his ball pressure, D'Lo was cooking. Him and Alvarado were kind of talking shit back and forth, right? D'Lo was hitting step back threes, and you talked about the third. He had a good first quarter. He had 15 in the first half, finished with 21. So 6 points in the second half, really struggled with their ball pressure. And we went to, and Austin didn't really have a shot going per se. And they, again, were super aggressive with him, and he knew they would be. We were trying to hunt Alvarado on switches. So we were we're having LeBron post him up in New Orleans. That's kind of where they are able to attack you, right? Defensively, they get a lot of steals. Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, Alvarado, those dudes had a lot of long arms. They were getting picks, and we just weren't working out of those doubles well. LeBron was 1 for 9, I think, in the fourth quarter. AD really picked it up with his second chance, offensive rebounds, getting second chance points. I don't know if you could tell if he was kind of laboring with his back a little bit. Looked like he was nursing a little bit of the injury. Didn't have the quick twitch jump. But I thought what really stood out, Vinay, and this is why both of us have kind of preached, you got to give it time. And 1 minute left, I think we were up one, 1 minute left, and they go to Austin, LeBron, pick and roll.
Yeah.
Austin on ball, drives, makes a insane pass to the corner to D'Lo, who hits the three to kind of tie it. But yeah, I thought tonight the Pelicans went with a Nance Zion front court for a lot of this game, and AD just could not bully Larry Nance. Nance has a low center of gravity, but he's a guy usually AD can go through. I don't know if he was hurt. He just wasn't able to go at him. LeBron's jumper wasn't going, and Zion's just a tough guy to go through every time. It's very tough to attack him every single possession, especially when he's going at you, right? I thought Zion jumped into LeBron and AD. That dude, you talked about the anomaly he is. I don't know a guy that jumping into AD 50 times to get layups, to get contested layups at the rim and hit them at the pace that he does. But yeah, I thought the kind of sharing the guard LeBron kind of possessions there was interesting. And the fourth quarter, they definitely went back to LeBron because I thought D'Lo just could not get up to the ball pressure that was attacking him from New Orleans. But yeah, Denver's an interesting team. They kind of attack you in similar ways. They're very physical also at the point of attack. And it was good to see the team at least fight through that, right? Usually a 1 for 9 LeBron fourth quarter is a loss. And to be honest, Vinay, Zion went out with 40. I think Zion could have had 50 tonight.
Oh, just yeah.
The way he was cooking with 4 minutes left, it just felt or I don't remember how much time was left. But no, it's an interesting kind of thing to look at because I think we're going to need these guards versus Denver. I think we're going to need these guards to be able to create. LeBron's going to have Aaron Gordon hugging on him all series, you know, and that's a guy that gives LeBron problems. Aaron Gordon might be the best Kawhi and LeBron defender in the league. He gives them two as much trouble. I mean, LeBron's still going to get his basket, so is Kawhi. But, no, the guards are definitely relied upon for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very curious to see how this – we'll probably try and do maybe a Denver preview pod because I think there's some tactical stuff that we should probably discuss. But, like, one of the things that I think – I mean, it's definitely going to be a topic that we're going to end up discussing is Denver's much smarter with when they have to switch and when they don't have to switch. Like, they do a much better job communicating that sort of stuff. And Aaron Gordon, like he defensively locks in for that matchup against LeBron. So, like, I thought Zion did a nice job on LeBron, you know, in spot moments, especially in that fourth quarter because he was playing straight up. But Aaron Gordon is a different, you know, he's just as athletic, I would say, as Zion. He's probably not as much of a freight train offensively, but he can absorb all the bumps and stuff like that that LeBron does. And there's a lot of times where they play Aaron Gordon against LeBron, like, straight up. And so I'm going to be very curious to see how that matchup goes, because if LeBron can't win that matchup or isn't winning that matchup consistently, it kind of changes the dynamic of the Lakers offense and what's happening with them. Talk to me about – so I thought LeBron's burst these past two games has looked really – outside of the fourth quarter today, which he was kind of clearly gassed from the first three quarters. His bounces look really good. Like, he's looked really, really good, like, getting to the rim. That both games, I want to say the second quarter of both games, he's been attacking early. He's attacking, like, he's going early because he knows there's no backside help at the rim. And he's just been layup after layup after layup. And he's hitting contested layups. He's drawing fouls, baiting guys into you know, jumping. Yeah, he got Larry Nance with the pump fake. And then he winked at the crowd or whatever. Like,
yeah.
He's looked good. This is as good as his athleticism has looked. Talk to me about what, like, people – I think people are underestimating or forgetting sometimes that Bron's foot was fried before the playoffs even started, and his foot is not – and I think he talked about it a little bit. He's not there right now. Like, his foot is not that bad right now. So what? Talk to me about having a better version of Bron this season.
That's my whole thing with this. Like, I know you're going to go on a rant eventually on this on this topic, but, like – when I look at this team and what the differences are from last year, I think we did a pod, I remember early, I think in preseason, I said the whole point of this season is to get this LeBron and AD to April and May, right? Be able to get them there in one piece and somehow figure out the seeding. And look, the seeding is not what you want. Like, that's not the kind of terms of engagement you wanted going into the playoffs, but you're in, right? So, like, your record no longer matters. You are now in. You won't have home court, which is something you have to kind of battle, but Denver's your first test, and I think LeBron and AD are as healthy as they will be in this one of the season ever. LeBron's going to be 40 this December, like, so I don't know when you'll get your next chance, but he's as healthy as he's been probably since 2020 going into the playoffs, right? Yeah. All the other ones, he was probably hurt, and that's a big part of it. You just talked about LeBron winning his matchup. I think it's not just Aaron Gordon. It's when he gets Jokic on those switches, right? When they're going under, can you make up the space? So many times, Denver went under last year, and LeBron, obviously, teams have been going under LeBron for the entirety of his career, but he would, like, make up that space. He would have so much power when he turns that corner that it kind of negates you going under the screen. He just couldn't do that last year, and he's kind of talked about the struggles he's had. So him and AD, like, I think just having healthy bodies. AD also came back early last year, if you remember from injury. He came back a little bit early, and then LeBron came back earlier. Both of them, again, the medicals with both of them are very questionable. Like, so you just never know. But no, man, that's what I'm excited about. You got LeBron and AD both healthy, also not tired, right? No, they have not gone through two playoff runs. Yeah. They did play a lot to close this regular season. Yeah. How hard they played in a lot of those games, like, we can.
Can we talk about that for a second? Bron was playing free safety today. And this is the best free safety basketball he played. It was quite literally the difference between winning and losing that game. And I mean, it's just 4-point game. So everything was quite literally the difference between winning and losing the game. But Bron playing free safety, he had a play where they tried to slip. I think somebody drove baseline. I forgot what it was, off of a pump fake, off of a good closeout rotation. Some Pelicans player drove baseline and then tried to slip a bounce pass to the guy, cutting down the middle, Braun picks that pass off, goes the other way. I think he gets a layup or he sets up D'Lo for an open three, which he doesn't knock down. And then he has a couple plays where he fronts Zion's post up. Ball ends up getting thrown out of bounds because they throw it too far. Has another one where they try to throw an entry pass to Zion. Braun's on the front side. Austin's on the back side. Braun tips it away. I think Austin ends up saving the ball or something like that to another Laker. Braun's free safety today, his roaming defense today, was so – he took two charges in the second half. Took a really rough one
from
Zion on the first one. And then he took a second one. I forgot who it was. I think it was Herb Jones. It might have been. It was on. Fantastic. Braun was fantastic on that end. And I just want people to understand that when I get upset, not upset, but when I point out that Braun isn't making his rotations, that's the kind of stuff to talk about. Do I want him taking screens in the regular season against Gigi Jackson and the Memphis Grizzlies? No, I don't expect him to do that. But sometimes it is the difference between us winning and losing games because, you know, a team may pick on the fact that he's not doing it. But I'm really, really glad that we got a 17-assist game from Braun. So you get the facilitation version of Braun. And then you get this defensive version of Braun in this game.
Well, yep.
He did. I mean, he shot 6 for 16. AD shot 6 for 20. But they got to the rim. They drew fouls. And they did all the other stuff that we needed for us to win. And so I just want to point that out. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But
You're good.
Very, very good on that part. You can take that where you want today.
No, 100%. I think the part that's tough for me and people are like, well, LeBron can't do that every night, which I think, Vinay, me and you both agree. That's a true statement.
Yeah.
Then you're the seventh seed. Like, you know, like, so, like that's right, that's the right, part that, you right, know, yeah. like that's what you are. And so, like, I guess there's a give and a take for that. Like, if that's what you're going to get out of the All-Star forwards, then you're going to be a lower seed in the conference. Like, it's just that's the part that you kind of have to accept. But no, he was incredible tonight. And I think where you see it a lot is the rebounding. There are a bunch of plays where, like, Zion would go and take a floater. And Zion might have the quickest second jump of the league. There's nothing like
– He's nuts, yeah.
Guys like that shouldn't bounce like that. Like, there's no – that's the – it defies physics sometimes. But, like, Zion will go for a second – was going for a second jump, and LeBron boxed him out, jumped with Zion, and won, like, a contested rebound, and then did that thing where, like, he hard bounced it, like, dude, get the F off of me type of thing. No, he was just in his defensive bag. And I think, like, this team – really needs it. Like, I think him and AD's kind of been more consistent with that, but both of them kind of need to be special. Vinay, you're gonna play 2 to 3 just below average guard defenders like throughout a game, like, so in terms of just their physicality, and like you include Torian Prince in there, I think your forwards have to kind of be special in terms of their help defense. But no, LeBron was absolutely incredible. Can he do this on a night-to-night basis in the regular season? Probably not. And I'm expecting this nightly in the playoffs. Like, Denver, you got to meet – Denver's, like, number one meet force with force, right? Like, you got to go against it. You can't be finesse against Denver. And I think AD, LeBron, and Rui have kind of – Rui, to me, Vinay, also has kind of stepped up in that I can take, you know, drives to my chest. I can absorb them in a way that I don't think he was doing last year, as good as he was, as much of, like, a three-point threat as he was. He just wasn't the defensive – kind of embracer that he is this year. So hopefully those things kind of can kind of combine. But no, man, to your point, I think like LeBron was just awesome defensively, and you combine that with a team that's starting to find its way offensively. They beat a Pelicans team, Vinay, that's probably like a 4 seed in a normal Western year. Like, the Pelicans won 49 games. That's a shit ton of games to win.
That's and a good season. 50 wins that's is a good season.
It's a really good season. They missed Brandon Ingram for a lot of that. Obviously B.I., who's probably still not himself 100%, but Zion looked like one of the best players in the league. Like, I just don't know what you do. People were kind of going at AD a little bit for that. There's nothing you could do. If Zion going full speed at you, hitting contested lay-ins, there's nothing you do. But no, LeBron was super engaged, and hopefully that's a test of things to come. Let me ask you a question, because you just asked me if LeBron could win his matchup offensively against Denver. Is this a like AD has to win his matchup offense? Like, is this a, you know what? Because tonight I was watching this game and I'm watching how it was LeBron and AD offense, and the Pelicans were switching everything. And LeBron was kind of the only one able to get a shot off. I think we kind of don't, we, you know what I mean? And I think AD's going to have to get his shot off next series. Like, and it can't just be layups. It's going to, like, if those floaters aren't going in, he has to kind of trust it. where are you at with, I guess, like AD's offensive role in this next series, watching what you did tonight?
Yeah, I put the comment on the stream, but like I think AD's jumper's got to be there. Like his touch has got to be there. Something like that has to be there. Because Jokic is a heavier player than him, but AD has the agility part against him, you know. And, you know, it's got to be – he has to deal with the heavyweight on both ends, right? Because Jokic is going to try and just kind of pound his body basically throughout the entire game and play that game of attrition against AD. So, you know, like that question of winning the matchup, it's more like can Bron win that? Can Bron do enough damage or AD do enough damage to force a double team? Like every now and then, like when Bron drives, yep. Can he draw the double team? Or when AD drives, can he draw the double team? Because a lot of times they don't help. Like Denver won't help. They'll say, no, we're going to hold off on it. Unless they specifically think there's a guy that they can play off. Like Mike Malone is very chessboardy kind of with that. You know, like when Vando is there, sure. They would play way off of Vando because they want to make that pass the only one that's available. So the Lakers are going to have, you know, if we kind of look at the lineups that we have, like we're going to have a Jackson Hayes out there at some point. We're going to have like certain guys there. Are the Lakers prepared for that strategy to be deployed against them?
Yeah.
And then are you know, do our guys win their matchups enough? Like the lineups that we've really run outside of the starting lineup, is that like Bron, Jackson Hayes lineup with like D'Lo and Gabe Vincent right now is who it looks like, or Spencer Dinwiddie, but tonight it was Gabe Vincent. And then like Torian Prince is the third guy. So like, if you're going to run that lineup against the bench unit group of, you know, that Denver lineup, they're going to put Peyton Watson or they're going to put somebody on Bron to slow down his rim attacks against New Orleans. Bron was attacking that. Like that was I think we've joked about it a couple times on the pod that when that lineup is running correctly, Bron is constantly attacking the rim, finding open shooters because the team is trying to double team him. That has to happen against Denver for us to win that matchup against Denver. If Bron is settling for threes, then that kind of defeats the purpose of having Torian Prince and D'Lo and those guys out there.
Exactly. So
that's what I mean by winning the matchup. Like, if it may not be a one-on-one thing, but are we doing what we're trying to do with whatever that lineup is on the floor? That the execution has to be there. Hopefully that makes sense.
No. Yeah, it definitely does. It's just you were talking about the bench units. Denver is interesting, Vinay, because they really don't play a bench. Like,
yeah,
they're seven deep. Mike Malone is very, very strict about his minutes, and Denver plays pretty much a 7 to 8 man rotation. Their starters play a ton, especially even in the regular season, but in the playoffs for sure, they kind of tune that down. So you're right. I'm interested in that. I'm interested in like the non-LeBron minutes as well. We've been kind of giving D'Lo his own unit to run. So we've been having LeBron and Austin on the bench at the same time. So it's been like D'Lo, Rui, and AD. That lineup got smoked tonight because AD just could not get any offense going. And D'Lo as well just could not handle the ball pressure. And I think that's a huge storyline going forward. Denver takes away the rim. Jokic kind of sits in the paint and kind of dares you to make shots. Aaron Gordon, again, we just talked about it, will lean on you, super physical, right? He's going to wear you down as the game goes on. I think it's important that like Austin and D'Lo have it going. But Vinay, these last four Denver games, or last eight, whatever the hell they've been.
Yeah.
All same movie. Last fourth quarter. Denver goes to the Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, Jokic three-man game.
Yeah.
And the Lakers have no answer to score on their offense. They like their offense dies. What's the solve here? Is it because I think that's this series again is going to be close. Like I see both of these teams kind of in a war. It's fourth quarter. That's kind of the main kind of matchup hub I see for this. Like I see in the comments is just saying AD needs his jumper and I totally agree. I was thinking Denver will happily give AD his jump shot. That's it's a little bit of a double coin there, which I agree AD needs his jumper. But late game, where does this team go? I think that's the kind of the monkey on their back with Denver. Where does this team go, I guess, late game? Because you saw it tonight. Yeah. A little concerning. Like, New Orleans is not as good. And they even benched Brandon Ingram, who's like not their best defender, but one of their longer guys to kind of keep more ball pressure and just physicality and length out there. That's my concern against Denver is we have not, like, if we beat them at least once this season, you can feel pretty good. We have not crossed a win versus Denver since Russ Carter. And Thomas Bryant and yeah. LeBron beat him at home. What's how are you feeling, I guess, on that in terms of just like clutch situations against this Denver team?
Yeah, so I think the thing that we've seen Denver do against us that kind of smokes us every single time is they basically run the two-man game with Jokic and they just let him dribble it around. They run the two-man game with Jamal and Jokic, and then they give Jamal the ball and let him dribble around basically as much as he wants until he gets the shot that he wants. And the Lakers have not really had an answer for that. Maybe Gabe helps with that because he's really, really good chasing guys around. But I think there's a team effort that's involved with that. Our clutch offense is going to be very interesting because I think that the Lakers are going to go to that Braun plus a guard pick and roll stuff that we've been doing, like the two-man game that we've been doing with Austin. It really feels like they're pretty comfortable with running that. Like that's the pet play that they want to run. Maybe they run more pick and roll stuff. Like we've seen Austin run pick and roll with AD to close out games successfully. We've seen Braun do it, not as much because you could just switch that Jokic with Jokic and Aaron Gordon. They're probably just switching that matchup. So I'm very curious to know how that's going to work out because I could certainly see them just going right to like do what's worked, which is the Austin Braun thing that worked today. Like that D'Lo three gets set up off of them kind of hunting CJ McCollum to try and get by him. That ends up being successful. So I think that's what it's going to be. I would hope, Raj, that what we saw today with the Braun holding the ball, like I mean, assuming that we have a lead, but if it turns into a tight game, one possession game, just going shot for shot, we don't resort to that because I don't think that's a strong suit for the Lakers. Like just giving Braun the ball and then just saying, okay, hold it for 22 seconds and then shoot the ball. Like I get it. It's Braun, you know, you don't want it. You ride with your guy. This is a Kobe thing that we ride with him all the way. If that's what the Lakers do, then that's what the Lakers do. I just don't know if that's the best kind of offense for them to do sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think those are probably going to be the first two options that they're going to go with. They're going to go with that guard plus Braun screen stuff and then Braun ISOs. What do you think about those two options down the road?
I think that's correct. I think Denver makes that complicated because the guy we try to attack is Jamal Murray, and they kind of hide him on D'Lo. And so, not that, you know, D'Lo can't have a good series, but D'Lo is just not that type of screener like Austin is. D'Lo is also just not as good in the short roll. I think you've complained about this. D'Lo just doesn't go to the rim either, so he doesn't get to the line, which means you're kind of living off D'Lo jump shots. And so you kind of want Austin in that situation as well. Look, man, I want to die and live with my stars. Like, I think this has to be a LeBron and AD series, in my opinion, especially in the fourth quarter. Like, I get it. Jokic is a big, blurry dude who's improved defensively. You got to make that dude move his feet, make him slide his legs, make him do the Jokic foul complain. Like, he puts two hands under his chin and to the ref every time he commits a foul. Like, one of those where it's like really tight. Yeah, like I need that to be often coming. Like, you need to like put that guy in positions where he needs to make a decision. He's fouling, or you're getting to the rim, or you're scoring. And be physical at the basket. Like, I want to live and die with our stars. Like, Austin, like, that's a really cool, like, that Austin gets trusted in late games, and I'm comfortable with him running actions. But no, this has to be a LeBron and AD series. And another guy, which I think is really interesting, but which I don't think I expected just with how the season's closed.
Yeah.
Is this a Gabe Vincent series? Like, I'm just, it's very interesting.
We should discuss that because today Gabe Vincent had a great game. He knocked down, I think, two threes.
Had the little floater lane too.
Yeah, he had the layup and layup and wind. He had some really nice defensive plays. He had to sit out for a little bit because he looks like he pulled his groin or something like that on a hard closeout.
Can't catch a break. Yeah.
Yeah, but his aggressiveness in tagging guys that were just running around, guys that were just like, just his stickiness, you know, defensively was really, really good. He had the play that I thought jump-started the Lakers where it was a loose ball and he dove on it before Dyson Daniels could get to it. He ends up grabbing the ball away from Dyson, giving it to Torian, leads to a bucket. It was in the second quarter when we went on that run to tie that game up. I thought that was really good. I thought that was pretty spectacular to see that kind of effort. That stuff is infectious because I think you see that come from him. Then you see Jackson get involved. You see Taurean get involved, like, in that respect. And I thought that was really cool. This game is a game where, like, Gabe's got to play. Like, you know, Cam is out. I don't even think he's going to get playoff minutes, honestly, now that Gabe is back.
I don't think so, but,
yeah, and we don't know what's going on with Vando, if he's going to be back. I don't think he's going to magically heal, like, right before the series starts. That'd be really strange. It'd be, and I think it would be kind of irresponsible of Ham to just throw him out there, like, into the rotation after these guys have done what they've done. But I think he's going to be an important part of it. You know, I tweeted this, but props to Ham for sticking with Gabe. Like, Spencer had a rough start to the game. And it's very clear Spencer doesn't know, like, when to attack and when to facilitate right now, because he just doesn't know when to do it. He's at his best when he's attacking the rim. I need Spencer to get back to doing that. Like, it's cool you throw the cross-court passes. We don't need that. If you can beat your guy to the rim, just beat him to the rim and take a shot, because that helps the Lakers much more. But props to him because he went with Gabe because Spencer had a rough start. And I think Spencer will probably have a role to play for us too as well. He's a big guard.
Same.
He gives us a little bit more size. But I think both those guys are going to be – we haven't talked about it yet, Raj, but this is a big D'Lo series. D'Lo got completely wiped out of that series
100%.
By KCP. I would not be shocked if D'Lo doesn't have a good game one, or has a very shaky game one, or like a non-aggressive game one, I guess, whatever version, that his minutes get pulled back a little bit for guys, and Ham takes a shot at playing maybe more defensive-oriented guys to wear down Jamal, whether it's Spencer or Gabe. What do you think about, like, that's a three-guard tandem that we got? Austin's locked into his minutes. So what about that three-guard tandem? How do you make that work?
We talked about over the summer. Like, let's be honest, Gabe Vincent is D'Angelo Russell insurance, right? Like, you don't give your full MLE to a guy you think won't play big minutes or couldn't close. And then we got Spencer Dinwiddie, who was Gabe Vincent insurance, who was D'Angelo Russell insurance. So, like, how this has worked, you now have, like, two guards, I guess, you can play. Look, man, this is a you need to be a two-way player series. Like, it just is. Like, D'Lo had I thought D'Lo had a really good game one defensively. Tonight it was a little bit hit or miss. I didn't like D'Lo's defense on Alvarado. Honestly, I thought Alvarado blew by him way too many times. Like, Alvarado should not be putting you in jail, quote unquote. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Alvarado should not have you on your back in jail, creating offense. Like, and it happened too many times with D'Lo tonight. But
there was a play. Sorry to interrupt, because it's crossing my mind, so I was trying to download it quickly. There was a play where Alvarado, I think it cut to a timeout afterwards, where Alvarado had him in jail and held the ball long enough where he had to get AD to commit to the block, and he slipped it to, I think, Larry Nance or a dunk.
Yes.
The next play, D'Lo did a better job fighting to get back in front of Alvarado, so Alvarado had to kick it back out to the three-point line, and it kind of blew up whatever that pick and roll action was. I crossed my mind because I was just like, you need that second effort. Like, that second effort has to be there. You can't be getting wiped out
every time.
Yeah.
That needs to be the effort every time, and Denver's going to punish you in a way that New Orleans just can't. Like, Jamal Murray is just miles better than CJ McCollum, right? At least now in their careers. CJ was obviously good in his prime. I don't even know how old CJ is. He just plays like he's a very old guard. But in any case, like, yeah, like, to me, this is a series if D'Lo doesn't have it. And, man, Vinay, I was thinking about this. Our bar is so low. Like, if Gabe can hit open threes, it just changes the trajectory of, you know what I mean? Like, Miami was having Gabe come off screens, pulling from 35, getting to the paint, hitting floaters. And we're just like, Gabe, please just hit open shots. Like, can you hit some open threes wide open? LeBron's going to set you up. You don't even have to do anything. You don't have to step back, nothing. Just catch in rhythm and fire. Dinwiddie, the same situation, right? Dinwiddie, a bigger guard. He's really locked in defensively. Like, Spencer, just hit a couple corner threes. Like it just helps so much, the gap between that and being a zero on offense, which Spence has been for a lot for some of this season. Those two guards, I think, can really flip, because you just can't have as good as Austin is. Like, Austin and D'Lo on Jamal Murray for 38 minutes a game. It's just, that's a really tough. Not that, and again, there's some plays, Vinay, where you're going to play perfect defense on Jamal Murray. He's going to hit the jump shot.
He's going to make them.
He's a nail. Same with him. What sucks about Denver is they have like six of these guys. Like, you can play perfect defense on Jokic. You can hit it. MPJ can hit it.
MPJ's, KCP. Yeah.
MPG is another guy. MPJ might not even play that. Like, they should look into whatever the hell's going on over there. But
just guilt by association. Get that dude out of here.
I don't know, man.
Investigate the brother and him. Making the whole family's under investigation.
You tell me the brother had no idea this was going on? Like, all right. Well, we can do that later.
That's crazy. That should be a bigger story than it is, because you're basically confirming that.
Oh, imagine if Dante Porter played for the Lakers. Like, this would be like LeBron would have to answer FanDuel conversations, but because he plays for the Wizards or the Nets, or I forgot which bottom dwelling team that Dante Porter plays for. But in any case, you need two-way players in this series. Who Rui guards will be interesting as well. I think this is a Gabe Vincent series, man. Like, he looks like he's got enough ramp to like run up. He has 4 days off again to hopefully heal whatever went on with him. But this is the best. Like, Gabe Vincent looks like the player he was. Even if the shots aren't going down, this looked like the guy that, you know, they signed over the summer. So we'll see with how it plays versus Denver. But he's stepped up, man. It's nice to have a guard that's kind of defensive first, at least on this team. So him and Dinwiddie have kind of filled that role.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that gets managed. I think Ham is going to get scrutinized very heavily for which guards he plays, which combination of guards he plays. After the four-guard debacle or whatever it was, the three-guard debacle where he played, I think, Gabe, Spencer, and D'Lo all at the same time, which was a horrendous choice because all three of those guys need the ball in their hands to be useful. He ended up, I think he's pulled back from that. Now he's just only using two at a time and scaling up accordingly. So I'm going to be curious to see what happens with that. I thought Rui had a nice rebounding game today. We talked about it a little bit. His defensive game was nice. I mean, they put him on Brandon Ingram today, and he was crowding Brandon's like mid-range space. He did a nice job. He kind of faced up. He faced up Zion a couple times too as well. Like we've talked about, you know, them making that change with the starting lineup, but I feel that Rui's utility, like today was a game where Rui didn't get a ton of shots like early in the game. Like, I think he hit a three, but for the most part, it's not like they were feeding. He was a game like the back cuts over and over again, he did the last game. But I thought he did a really nice job staying engaged defensively. And he was, Raj, honestly, like, okay, if we're not going to have Vando, we're going to need him to be engaged on that end, because we don't really have a guy with a ton of size to do that. Like, I don't think he's going to guard MPJ, because MPJ likes to run off of screens and Rui's not going to get around screens. You're probably going to have a guy like Torian Prince or somebody like that on MPJ. But, you know, like, to buy some minutes off of a switch on the Jokic or, you know, whatever it may be, you're going to need Rui's help. How important – let's just assume Vando's not coming back. Like, in your mind, is there a version of this – is there a version of Rui that's, like, on the floor for, like, defensive purposes? Like, obviously, he's going to get you the midi. If there's a broken shot, you can go, you can ISO him. Like, do you see what do you see with him in terms of like his defensive, like doing the extra stuff, defense and the extra stuff? I feel like he's done it. Do you see the same thing?
Bro, he's one of our five best players. Like, know what I mean? Like, I think Rui just has to, like, I think our starters have to play a ton versus Denver. I think just the way we match up, like, our especially versus their starters. We don't really have a lineup that can match up their starters. That's not our starting lineup. So I think like Rui's going to have to play a ton. I think his defense has really stepped up, and he's another one of my benchmarks to watch, because I think Rui is better this year than he was a year ago. Like, I just think he's a better overall player, especially defensively. He might not be the hot shooter that he was like a year ago in the playoffs, but I think his just utility with the team. I talked about the baseline cuts.
Yeah,
New Orleans adjusted to that. Like, they definitely did not lose the 6'8", 200-pound man sneaking the baseline this game. They kind of adjusted and kind of forced the ball to kick out to wings. That's how, like, Torian Prince got four threes, because, like, Rui cut, and they tagged him when he cut. But, no, Rui's has a – like, Vinay, I think we're going to start by putting Rui on Jokic. Like,
you think you start off like that?
I 100% do. Like,
interesting.
I think we start off with Rui on Jokic, have AD on Aaron Gordon. Or maybe LeBron and Aaron Gordon. We'll kind of see how it goes there. But I think we're going to try to have him roam, and that's what our game plan will be game one. Honestly, like, if you go back and watch that series, that worked for a good amount of time. The issue with that was we could not score. Like, we still could not score on the other end, and Denver eventually, like, pick your poison. You can't use the same coverage on Jokic a million times, but I think that's how we start. So I think Rui has a huge defensive ask in the series, and if it's not Jokic, who does he guard? Like, yeah. I mean, MPJ is an impossible cover for him. Like, you just don't want Rui running around two screens like every possession. He's just not going to be able to catch up. So it'll be interesting to see who they kind of throw him on. Maybe Aaron Gordon, and you put LeBron on Jokic. But I don't think
is this a game where Bron chases MPJ around? Do you think the series is where Bron, because he would wipe out you don't have to worry about the actions with MPJ the same way you would if let's say you put Rui on Jokic, right? And you put Bron on MPJ, put AD on Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon's like almost always in the dunker spot, like at all times. So AD is always relatively in the paint. There's a version of this where if Bron is willing to chase MPJ to the screen, they can run that switch. Like, Rui can switch on to MPJ and then kind of negate that extra space that he would get for that pull-up three coming off the screen. Bron immediately jumps over to Jokic, and then AD's there to help side two as well. I could see a version of that. Mm-hmm. I could see that working. Will they do it? I don't know. But that requires some buy-in from Bron for that to work.
Can you be like a little hot take here? Like, people might think I'm crazy. I think LeBron needs to guard Jamal Murray. Like, I'm dead serious. Like, I'm looking at the matchups, and Vinny, do you know what Jamal Murray averaged last playoffs against just us? Four games.
Like 30.
He averaged 32, 6, and 6.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. That's a fire that you gotta keep calm. And starting, if LeBron's not on him, it's one of Austin and D'Lo. And God bless Austin, who's gonna chase over screens as much as he can. He just doesn't have the girth on his body to deal with Jamal, right? Jamal is very good at kind of bumping you off and creating separation off screens. I think LeBron needs to guard Jamal Murray. Maybe not the whole game.
Interesting.
But that's something that we just never went to a year ago, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I just don't think we really threw LeBron on Jamal Murray. I think he's going to have to guard Jamal. There's going to be points where he's going to have to guard Jokic as well. I don't think that's a matchup they want to like keep on him, just would wear him down a little bit because Jokic would go in the post. But I don't like LeBron as a chaser. I see in the MPJ is not the guy. I don't want LeBron trying to chase over and
My point is you chase him into the switch. Like, somebody has to chase MPJ because you can't have him just catch and shoot threes. He's going to murder us if he does that. I'm saying you chase him into the switch. So, like, if Bron, so what happens is when Jokic gets that pass, like, he's going to look at MPJ and set up that DHO for him.
Right, right.
If Rui is on him and Bron is on MPJ, MPJ is not taking that catch and shoot opportunity. And if he goes into that DHO action, it's easier to switch that off because you have size for size. That's what I'm trying. That's just like, because that's probably how we would have used Vando. Like, Vando would have been on MPJ if we had deployed him that way. And then he would have just chased him all the way through because he's a better screen attacker. But I think because you don't have Rui, who's great at navigating screens, and Bron, because you don't want him to get beat up by screens throughout the entire game, it's easier to just chase him into that, be prepared for the three to come off that screen. You know, Rui hedges a little bit more because MPJ is not really like that kind of passer, right? Like, he's not like Curry where he's going to come off that screen and make that pass perfectly. So I think the Lakers can try and carry that, but who knows? I don't.
Yeah.
What have they done? They've been playing Austin on MPJ or something like
that. Yeah, they have. Which MPJ just says thank you very much.
I'm just gonna shoot over him every single.
Yeah, I could shoot over him, but I guess the point is just have somebody attached to him. And look, MPJ went 10 for 10 last game, which
is just ridiculous. Yeah.
Just what are you gonna do? And Denver won by like 4 or whatever. So like you do the math on in terms of how that helped them win, but. Yeah, it's an interesting kind of conundrum that they're in. Last year, I remember – do I remember this right, Vinny? Game one, we started Dennis. I believe we started Dennis, D'Lo, and Austin. if I have that correct, I mean, like three guards to start that series. At least that's what I thought we did. But we had Vando guard Jamal Murray a lot, and none of that really changed. And Vando also kind of torpedoed our offense because he couldn't shoot, so killed our spacing. So at least this year you should have a little bit more kind of offensive capabilities. But yeah, it's interesting because you look at them. How I look at this, Vinay, is there's no clean matchups. Like there's no clean. There's a mismatch somewhere. It's just where the hell you want to put it. Yeah. And I guess MPJ is the place. Like, people say Aaron Gordon, but Aaron Gordon kills you on the offensive glass. Like if you put a small on Aaron Gordon, he's gonna
almost every time. Yeah. Single-handedly almost. He's basically their small ball center. He's very destructive.
And Denver leverages his non-shooting better than any team in the league leverages a non-shooter, in my opinion. Like the people are like, how did MPJ get open? It's like Aaron Gordon setting a little screen and no one's guarding Aaron Gordon. So there's like, to your point of the switching there, no one's guarding Aaron Gordon. There's no one there to switch. Yeah. So like Denver does that really well. So that's why I like putting AD on Aaron Gordon is kind of the way I think they're going to do it. Cause AD can at least try to get out. He's long enough. It's just going to lead to some open threes. We just have to hope KCP and MPJ don't turn into Steph and like Clay again, man. Like I remember KCP hit a bunch of really tough threes last year as well. But Denver's a tough team to guard in any sense. It's just I think these matchups are really interesting, how you kind of maneuver to put guys on them. But what do you think about that? LeBron on Jamal Murray. Maybe not right away, maybe not the whole series, but like Jamal started burning last year and we just did not throw anything on him that I thought that had a chance to stop him. But where are you at with that?
If it's a fourth quarter deployment thing, I think we did that in the bubble. Ended up being successful because he was torching even Danny Green, who we considered one of our better defenders, wing defenders. So I can certainly see that. It probably doesn't make sense to do it throughout the entire game because, again, they're just going to run Jamal through like 10 screens, and Bron's not going to go after more than one, maybe at the most. So I want to bring something up. So the same way that the Lakers run specific lineups for specific purposes, like the purpose of the lineup is very specific. Denver, in my opinion, also does the same thing too as well. And they have lineups where, you know, it's meant for Jamal to basically shoot the ball every single time he comes down the floor. And they run lineups like that and they run actions like that. I think if the Lakers are a really good defensive team, if they're like locked in, if our scouts are doing the right thing, they're going to recognize when that's happening and they're going to have the personnel on the floor based on that. Mm. So the non-Jokic lineups that result in Jamal being on the floor where he gets a green light to shoot the ball as much as he wants. Like those lineups are the ones where like Gabe needs to be on Jamal. Like that's like, you got to deploy Gabe very, very specifically to have him on the floor. You know, like I'll give you an example. Like Ham, there was a nice Ham. He's going to get killed. He's always going to get killed by our fan base. But we gave him props for playing Gabe over Spencer and not forcing that Spencer minutes in the second half. Another thing that he did is when Zion left the floor, he immediately put LeBron back in. He didn't go. He didn't try to match up Bron's minutes with Zion exactly. Like even though it did cost the Lakers the lead to some degree, like the Lakers went on a run again when Bron came back into the game. Part of the reason for that is because Zion left the floor and we played like he staggered the guys correctly to build that lead back up. Basketball's a game of runs. That's something that you always say. But I think the Lakers have to be like out of every single team that we could possibly face in the playoffs, Western Conference and whoever we see in the finals, if we make it there, Denver seems like it is the most tactically sound team. Like Mike Malone runs very, very purposeful tactical lineups with very specific purposes. And I think the Lakers, you know, we talk about the coaching gap, and Laker fans will say that there's a vast gap between Ham and Mike Malone. And to some degree, there may be. But all of these games have come down to the wire. They haven't been blowouts. They've all come down to the wire. I think there is a little bit of tacticalness that we can be better on.
Sure.
With our lineups. When we're trying to recognize what they're trying to do on the defensive end. Like, and I think that is something that we just have to be really, really good about. And part of it is influenced by performance. If D'Lo plays Brad, that throws some of our lineups out the window. Like we can't rely on him to do certain things. And if our role players aren't making shots, that's the same thing too as well. But I think, what do you think about that? Is that a fair way of assessing like the real game within a game? It's not just the players playing better, you know, Bron's foot being healthier and his athleticism being, but that those small, does this feel like the series should be more of a chess match than people are letting on?
100%. I think Denver is like the best clutch time team the last 5-6 years. Like that team gets into whatever they want to run. They'll bullshit during the regular season. They'll bullshit games when it's crunch time. Like they know exactly where they're going. Every player kind of fits perfectly into this glove of boxing that they're running. It's interesting. I think Denver just in crunch time is a team that you're going to have to run your stuff correctly as well. And it's interesting because I was listening to like people talk about Vogel's offense, right, with Phoenix, and like, why does he run one-on-ones with Devin Booker and why doesn't he run anything? Bro, his team is Devin Booker and Kevin, like, what do you think they want to run? And I think we run into some of that as well, right? Denver is in a weird way, like they have the best player in the league as most people see, but they're also very structurally like composed, right? They run a lot of stuff, run a very purposeful actions, as you broke down. Jamal Murray and Jokic have played so many possessions together that you can't catch up to that continuity. Like you just can't. It's very much in the Draymond Green Steph kind of mold where those two guys have been playing together so long, you're not going to catch up with that. How you can catch up is by running the correct stuff, being purposeful with your stuff. And I think this series, it's the most important. Like you got like the attacking Jamal Murray everyone has to be spaced correctly. I didn't like the way we attacked Jose Alvarado tonight. I didn't like our spacing on those. Like those need to be crisp against Denver. And yeah, like the coaching advantage is interesting. I think both of us aren't as low on him. Mike Malone just has 10-11 years of head coach experience over Darvin as well, right? Like he's been in these kind of wars. He also has a team that's won already, so his message kind of comes out a little bit more credibility, I'm sure. And those are things that, you know, you can kind of weigh. But like these games have been close. You mentioned Gabe Vincent, you know, kind of defending Jamal Murray. I think the tough part about it is Gabe Vincent plays like 12 to 15 minutes. Jamal Murray plays like 38, you know, unless you're going to increase Gabe's minutes by that magnitude. And I just don't see that happening with like the ramp he's on. I think he's going to play at like this 15-20 minute pace. So we'll see how that goes. Gabe is also small. Like he defends really well. It's just, I think he's also like, I would like to see Dinwiddie in this lineup as well. It's just Denver's a problem in crunch time. And, but the Lakers have to score, man. I've been preaching this since the series ended. We lost that series because we couldn't stop Murray and Jokic, but lost that series because our stars couldn't score, Vinay. Like they could not score in fourth quarters.
Yeah.
LeBron's jump shot did not exist for like two or three of those games. AD's offense went to hell. And I think AD got like nicked up in some way and like his offense just was not going and his jumper did not exist in that series. You're going to lose. Like the stars have to be better. I don't know if that answers directly your question on there, but I think that like that's a big part of it. Denver's, how many times did Jamal Murray and Jokic just hit every big shot in LA?
Yeah.
Especially the like Jokic the
following nonsense that he
throws. Yeah, the Sambar shuffle or whatever they call it. Like those are the ones where you gotta answer with your stars and they just didn't answer enough last year.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring that up. You know, there's certain things that they're just like they have guys that'll just hit improbable shots. MPJ will hit like a heavily contested three just because he's taller than 99% of the league. Jokic, same thing. Jamal, he's just a tough shot maker, I think, in just general. He is. But I think, you know, like even their bench is really good. Christian Braun is a really good player. Peyton Watson has stepped into that Bruce Brown role really well. They have Reggie Jackson, I think, coming off the bench for them still. So he's there too as well. I don't know if DeAndre Jordan gets play anymore. He might, but you know they gave him some spot minutes too as well. But the thing, so I wanted to bring something up. I watched a game a few weeks ago. It was a Clippers Nuggets game, and I think the Clippers were without Kawhi in that game, if I remember correctly. And I think they might have had Kawhi. So I might be misremembering. But they beat the Nuggets, and I watched that game because A, it was a game that the Clippers really needed to win to like keep their seeding or whatever. And B, the other thing was the defense they deployed on the Nuggets was very interesting to watch. They essentially played a stay-at-home like defense. They said, we're not going to help on anything that Jokic does. Like, if he overwhelms Zubac on a possession, whatever. Like, that's what's going to happen. It's going to be Zubac's responsibility to do that. And a lot of times when Zubac or somebody else was, like, kind of stalemating Jokic, Jokic's first kind of thing to do is to look for that open pass. Like, where's the open guy that I can give it to? And a lot of times he didn't have somebody. And there were a few times where he tried to, like, force it to, like, Aaron Gordon in a dunker spot. But somebody was already standing there. Like, a defensive player was already there kind of boxing him out, waiting for the pass. And I thought that was a really interesting defense because it reminds me of, like, what the Clippers would do against, like, Luka. Like, Luka would put up these crazy video game numbers against the Clippers. And I know that's, like, a hotly thing. Yeah, and they lose. And he gassed himself out, you know, like, in the third or fourth quarter, those shots aren't falling, or he's not getting the fouls that he wants, or he's not gaining the advantages that he wants. And, you know, I see Clippers and Mavs fans arguing with each other on the timeline, and now Kyrie Irving's there and blah, blah, blah. And then that's their own, they can deal with that. You know, I'm just going to watch it and enjoy the series. But that defense has worked against Luka because he's a phenomenal player, but he doesn't hurt. If he's not getting 10, 12, 15 assists, and if you keep it down to 6 or 7, okay, let's say he scores like 50 points or something like that. That's other guys that are not getting a rhythm. They're not getting touches. They're not locked in defensively. You know, they have no rhythm going into the third and fourth quarters. And if that star player is slowed down a little bit, you know, you see that happen. I felt like we saw that a little bit with Zion today. Like, Zion was on fire. And we ran into that issue of we couldn't score in the fourth quarter. Like you mentioned, Bron going 1 for 9. We ran into that issue again. But the rest of the dudes on that team were not locked in. Like, they weren't, like, knocking down. CJ had a terrible game. Never got a chance to get under. Trey got hot a little bit. Trey Murphy got hot a little bit. And then I think you mentioned also Alvarado kind of got hot a little bit too with what he was doing. But for the most part, they kept it only Zion. The Lakers didn't allow anybody else to get loose. That's part of the reason why they had the lead to begin with. Do you think that is a strategy that we can deploy on Nikola Jokic? Because there is a large portion of their offense that just runs through him doing different things, like Sabonis does for the Kings and whatnot. Can we turn Jokic into a scorer and win a series where we force him to be a scorer? Let's say that he's like a 60-40 scorer facilitator. Can we make him a 40-60? Sorry, can we make him a 70-30 or an 80-20 score versus passer? And can we win a series if we make him do that?
I think you could. I think the issue with Jokic, and I remember the Clipper game. I think they had Zoo on him, right? And Zoo
and Plumlee. They had Miles also, I think, as the backup at the time. Yeah,
I think Mace. Yeah. One of the brothers, is on the Clippers. I don't even know if the other one's in the league still. I'm not even sure. But no, I was watching that one as well. It's just, as great as AD is defensively, Jokic just kind of bullies through him in a way that, like, even Zoo, I think, doesn't get. Zoo just is weighs more. It's just a bigger, has more in his back pocket than even AD does. And I think you can go that route. The only issue is, I think, number one, Jokic scores on a lot of those, super efficient, right in the post. And Denver is good enough that they can kind of diversify their offense, even if you are willing to give that up, right? So the Jamal Murray, Jokic, two-man game, the reason it's so lethal is not because of Jokic. Jokic gets a lot of credit for the passing. Jamal Murray is also just a wonderful ball screen navigator with the ball. Like, he's run it so many times with the same player. That's the part that gets underrated, that just doesn't exist as much anymore. Him and Jokic have ran it so many times that he just understands the ink. Once a guy is hit by Jokic's screen, he knows exactly whether it's a jump bounce, whether if it's a pocket, whether it's a wraparound, right? And you just get Jokic going downhill. And, like, it's easy for us to say, just make Jokic drop 40. It's really tough when the guy guarding him is just continually getting scored on. I think that's a tough place to be. I think the Clippers have an easier chance of doing that against a guy like Luka because it's more perimeter-based, and Luka's kind of attacking you in a one-on-one switch, right, attack. And that's from the perimeter. So Luka's hitting step-back threes. That's a shot you can kind of more live with go back in there. It's very tough when a guy's hitting like jump hooks at the rim on you.
I agree.
I think that's a tough place. I think the Lakers tried this kind of approach, and Jokic kind of diced it alive. And so I think that is a chance that they go with that for a stretch. I still think the way they go with it is just Rui or LeBron on Jokic and keep AD on a non-shooter. And to be fair, Denver has more non-shooters this year than they did a year ago with Peyton Watson.
Peyton's not a shooter, yeah.
Right.
Bruce Brown was.
And the other guy they have as well, who's a rookie, I forgot his name, that plays for them, who's had a really good year. Not a rookie, but maybe second-year guy. I don't remember who it was, but he's also in their rotation. But those are also non-shooters that you can kind of play off of and have AD kind of guard those guys. But I think Jokic has entered the realm, Vinay, where you just can't keep one coverage on him, right? Like, it needs to be – you need to constantly switch things up. You need to constantly adjust to whatever he's doing. Like, if he's cooking offensively, then you need to send help. If I think the place you get in trouble, to your point, is the 30 and 16 assists. Like, that's where you're in trouble. Every other guy is in rhythm, and he's got it going. Like, there has to be something that you take away, but I don't think you can go into a game kind of removing it. But how about you? Is that a route you would go game one if you're in Darvin's shoes? Are you going in like, hey, just let Jokic score and we're taking away all the passing lanes? So every cut, every dive, we're kind of keeping in front of us?
Yeah, I think you have to do that when like Jamal isn't on the floor. Like if they're not running stuff, like running set plays for Jokic to do that, like you should do that. Like you have to try and isolate offense and like take away the other guys. Like I think we talked about like D'Lo stepping up and stuff like that, but like the role players outplaying the opposing role players, like that's a big part of I think what coaching is, like playing the right role players, giving them the right instruction, telling them to stay home, telling them, look, even if he gets scored on three times in a row, don't panic, just play, just keep playing your game. And I think really, really good coaches can say, this is how we want them to score. We want Jokic to expend a ton of energy trying to score through the first three quarters. Because, you know, it does affect his jump shot. He's not making those shots. That Clippers game, he wasn't hitting a lot of those jumpers that he typically does because he was so gassed out from having to do as much as he did. This is another series. Like, the Denver has always torched us in transition, like off of our misses, because Jokic will grab the rebound and he manages to, like, seal AD on the offensive rebound attempt, like at exactly the same time. I think we discussed it a long time ago where I was just like, AD just needs to stop going for offensive rebounds because he's getting caught behind Jokic and it's a 5-on-4 going the other way. But like, that's another thing like the Lakers have to be prepared for. Like, you can't let him basically set up a 5-on-4 off of his defensive rebound. So I'm curious. I'm very curious to see how they approach this. I think the level of detail they approach the series with will dictate a lot of the player performance. I know it's like a cliche thing to say, but I think if Ham wants to really show everybody that he knows, Ham and the staff wants to show everybody that he really knows what he's doing defensively or what he's doing as a coach, that level of detail has to be there. And I think, you know, the last two games, it's kind of been there. Like, I know Bron fans are going to give Bron all the credit for creating the passes and all that sort of stuff, making plays and all that stuff. Coaches very rarely get credit. It always goes to the star players for like the offensive execution and all that sort of stuff. But I think if that is what it is, I think the defensive execution has been pretty good the past few games from the Lakers, especially against this New Orleans team, which was really good. It was a really good New Orleans team. If we can get that level of detail, I think that gives us a really, really good chance. And then you just got to keep your fingers crossed, man. You got to get a hope that our stars don't forget how to score the basketball. There was a point, Raj, in today's game where Bron got it, I want to say, like five times in a row, and he had already missed like two or three shots, and they didn't look good. And like I was watching the game with my brother. I was at my brother's place, and I was just like, bro, you have to get the ball out of Bron's hand. Like just change it up. Like, switch it up a little bit here. Like, it's too easy for them to gauge what it is that he's trying to do because he's holding it for so long. And I think when they tied the game up, Austin had a play where he just went right to the rim. I forgot if he had a screen that set him up. But he went early in the shot clock before they were ready, like before the Pelicans were ready to even defend. And he gets a nice layup at the rim. And then obviously he has a D'Lo pass that goes for the three and whatnot. Like, we just – we can't have this. I know it's going to happen because it's LeBron. And we've already heard Austin Reeves and Darvin Ham say, it's LeBron. Like, you're going to give it to him. You're going to ride with the guy. But I think, like, we have to – hopefully our stars can like recognize like my shot's not falling. We gotta run something here. Do it. But I think Ham can help the defense out. I think when he's locked in defensively, like focusing on like this is what they like to run, this is what this player likes to do, this is what the purpose of this lineup is. I think Ham is a really good coach. I don't think he wants to always just blanketly run drop coverage all the time. Cause these high profile games, we're not just playing drop coverage the whole time. We're playing a bunch of different stuff and showing a different look, a bunch of different looks. So yeah. I think that can be a huge difference.
100%. And also, like, the good thing about, I guess, well, not good, but thing about playing Denver is you kind of know their team. Like, this team you should have, familiarity with. And, I think LeBron's played them enough where, like, LeBron – his pod is called Mind the Game, and this is a series where you're gonna have to really mind the game. Like, you're gonna have to really think things through, and it needs to be a team effort with all the coaches and with LeBron and AD and all the players on the roster. So this feels like a really nice rematch, which Vinay, in the NBA you don't get very many of those anymore. Like, usually teams flip so often that you don't really get a chance, and this series has a chance to really be a real rematch. One starter will be flipped, really. Rui will be in for whoever started last year, but it's basically the same 10 guys who started a year ago, right? Rui started game four. So both these teams should be very familiar. They played four games this year. Obviously, Denver won all – or did they play four or three? I don't know which exactly, but I know – I think
they won. I'm trying to think. Do we have Spencer and Gabe for
No, we had Spencer for – we had Gabe for game one, but I remember we were down like 20 by the second quarter. Like, the game was over very quickly.
Yeah.
So, but we didn't have Gabe after that. And then Spencer, obviously, we haven't had since I don't believe we had since we played them. I think we played them once since we got our new starters. And that game was also close. Like, an MPJ hit 10 threes or whatever it was to win. Not saying that was luck or anything, but just the context of it. But I think this is gonna be a fun series. I think these teams should match up well. Denver's always gonna be heavily favored, as they should, as the number two seed that they are. But I like our matchups, man. I think Rui's better than he was a year ago. I think Austin's better than he was a year ago. LeBron's healthier. D'Lo can't be worse than he was a year ago. Like, that's not possible. So I'm excited that the playoffs are back.
Everybody has a reason to have a chip on their shoulder, I would say, in this series.
Yeah.
Like, literally everybody has a reason on our team to have a chip on their shoulder. I remember when we did beat Denver. I think Russ was on the team at the time when we beat Denver twice the season they were here.
Bryant.
Yeah, and a big part of them also being successful was Russ just constantly attacking them in transition, so Jokic could never get settled. Mm-hmm. I need D'Lo to be aggressive. He's not going to really go to the rim like that, but if Spencer's in the game, I need you to go to the rim. Don't waste time go to the rim and get shots at the rim. If they're not playing a guy that can block your shot at the rim, go to the rim and get easy baskets. That helps preserve your teammates and stuff like that. So it's just, I'll be very curious to see how it all works out. And we could do a pod where we covered so much about Denver already, but Lakers did a great job, Raj. They took care of two games against a team that we know that they're capable of doing it. They've beaten New Orleans several times this year, even prior to the two games that we played them. So I'm not shocked that they won this game, which leads me to kind of what my last thought was, which was something that's been very irritating to watch and very irritating to read, something that should have never made it off of Twitter, but made it off of Twitter because we know we know that the people that work at ESPN and some of these other shows, all they do is just take the most highest engaging NBA topic from the night before. And the one that hit our timelines a couple of days ago, the trending topic was, should the Lakers throw the first game of the season or first play-in game so that way they can play, take a win the second game and play OKC because it's a better matchup versus Denver. And I don't like that personally. there's nothing in my bone. Like, that's my nicest way of saying it. I put it as a title for this pod, you know, throwing games is for losers. I do believe that. I don't want to call people losers. I understand the logic of why they're saying that, because we haven't beaten Denver, and we can certainly beat OKC. That the confidence is there. I agree with that. I'm more confident of us beating OKC in a series than I would be against Denver. So I understand the logic, but just
sure.
The basketball person in me, that like this should never be a thought process ever. And I don't like it. And the part that bothers me so much is, it's okay if Twitter user IC D'Lo or LeBron James is the king or is it God, you know, like if those random accounts say stuff like that, because they're just normal people. I don't know why mainstream media or why national media decided to, like, I think Mike Green went on there and said something, and he's just like, the Lakers should absolutely drop it. What are you people? Do you guys get paid to cover sports? Sports is about winning. There's no version of sports that says, like, yeah, you should lose the matchup. You should lose a game to possibly get into a higher stakes game and then play a matchup. We just watched Keegan Murray and Keon Ellis game a playoff-tested Warriors team, playoff-core-tested Warriors team, and just shoot their faces off and win by double digits. That could have happened to the Lakers. Lakers could have lost today 100%. On Zion, because Zion goes ballistic. And that is so irritating, dude, to me to see it. And I again, respect to all the people. I'm not going to tell you how you should root, but just I don't like that. I think it's testing the basketball gods. And I'll give you the example of why I didn't. But before I do that, I want to ask, what did you think when you saw that? Hitting the
timeline. No, I mean, I was against it, you know, right away. Also, we've pissed off the basketball gods enough. You know what I mean? Like, I think we've pissed them off more than enough. We've done enough. We've blown enough games. We've BS'd enough games. And that's just not the way to go in. And look, you have LeBron and AD on your team. If you don't think they can beat the best, then what are we doing here? Like, what are we even doing here if you don't think those two can go at it? And I get it. Like, I think OKC definitely more favorable matchup, and maybe even if you can, like, if the Lakers had their pick, right? Let's say, like, everything was settled, then maybe you can kind of decide that route. But you could not guarantee that you win the second game. The whole point of the play-in is that you get two good shots at it, right? You get two good shots of making the 7-8 is that you get two good shots at it. If we lost today, but, like, we gave forth the effort we did, I can live with myself, yeah, right? If we tank this game and then lost on Friday, like, I could not live with that type of result. Like, and you're playing the Kings, who also have our number in the same way Denver does. We're playing the Kings that are as volatile on offense that exist in the league, even without Malik Monk and Kevin Herter, which have you. But, yeah, I just think that would have been a terrible decision. And the team was never going to do it. You're right. I don't know why that made it all the way to, like, first take and whatever, which is kind of insane. That's
so bad.
It's a conversation that you don't really hear. Like, teams have done this in the past. Like, the Clippers, I remember,
did something similar. Oh, yeah. I'm about to bring up that example right now.
Like, why I finished it about. Yeah, they kind of did some, buffoonery to end a season. And, like, it just never works out. Like, you should not be going to the playoffs hiding and shrieking against other teams. So no, it was a terrible idea. But no, go ahead, finish your the rant that you want to.
I wanted to bring up that Clippers example because this is a version of basketball gods, and there's some people don't believe in it. Like, I get it. Like, some of the fans, I won't name what fans they are, but they don't believe in basketball gods. They think everything's dictated by the players. That's totally fine. That's totally okay. So the Clippers are my perfect basketball gods example. So the last game of the season, the Clippers, if they win the game, they would match up against the Lakers in the first round or in the second round. No, in the first round, if I'm not mistaken. And that we would have finally gotten our Battle of LA with two healthy teams, mind you. A healthy Clippers team, healthy Lakers team in the first round. So the Clippers are playing a team that's tanking. I think it was Houston or somebody at the time. They were actively tanking to try and lose a game. They played OKC. Sorry. And this was when OKC was still tanking. And Shea was, like, ruled out or something like that.
It was so, two teams tanking a game. It was the most disgusting product that you
could put out. Terrible stuff. Yeah, there's no reason for them to do that. So Ty Lue empties the bench, and he's like literally playing like the bottom five guys, maybe even two-way guys. The Clippers lose that game, and they end up falling out of the Lakers bracket. The Lakers were defending champs. Lakers play the Suns in the first round. AD gets hurt. Our series is completely a wrap after that, right? So that story is what it is. The Clippers get put in the other bracket, and then they have the improbable run that they have that season. Now, during that run, what ends up happening is Kawhi gets hurt. He tears his ACL on a collision with Joe Ingles. And I'm not saying like that's something happened. That's why he tore his ACL. But the Clippers, you know, I think Paul George has a really spectacular next game with Kawhi out. And then the Clippers do the improbable. Terrence Mann has that crazy game 7 or game 6 or whatever it was. And shoots their face off, and they advance to their first ever Western Conference Finals in the history of their franchise. But since then, Kawhi's never been healthy. Like, he's never been healthy in the playoffs. They go back to the playoffs again last year. Kawhi is out after game 1 or game 2 or something like that. He plays through a meniscus tear, and he's out again. Kawhi again this year. Like, they look great. They've been balling. They get James Harden, blah, 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 that sort of thing. Kawhi, all of a sudden, knee issue, tons of swelling. Don't know what his situation is going to be for this Mavs matchup. So now you're again without him. Now, like, of course, injuries can catch up to you. I've torn both the ACLs in my knee, and I've rehabbed it, and I've been totally fine. So I understand how all that stuff works. But Raj, that is my example of testing the basketball gods. Like, they reached a peak in their franchise history that they've never reached before, which is the Western Conference Finals. So props to them. And for that team to getting to where they went to, but they've never seen that ever again. And you could argue, I would say most fans would say the Clippers have done everything the right way, got the right guys and the right coach and the right culture and the right blah, blah, blah. They've gotten guys on discounts, like Russ coming off the bench on a veteran minimum is an absolute steal. They lose Mason or whichever Plumlee brother that they lose for a significant amount of time. Daniel Tice magically becomes available on the market like the very next day. Like, everything is sort of fallen in their favor to some degree. But the thing that's never fallen in their favor is the health of Kawhi Leonard every time that it's gone through. And that can happen to anybody. It's not something that's specific. But I always think to myself, this is maybe the way I'm coping. That's probably what fans would tell me. But that's my version of testing the basketball gods saw you do that. Like, they saw you be dishonorable to the game. And they said, okay, you'll this is what you're going to have to deal with now. I'm not saying that they had to play their starters or something like that, but it's just the superstitious person in me, because I'm superstitious about different things, but especially basketball. I can't do that. We can't throw games like that. And I don't agree with people who think that that's a good idea. That was my rant. I was just so upset that national media folks were just like, yeah, we should do that. It's like, why do we have your show? I can just read Twitter now. I don't need to watch your shows anymore if you're just going to take this up from there. But that was my thoughts, man. You can take it wherever you have for your last thoughts
I think you covered it. That was an asinine kind of situation to be put in. LeBron was never throwing a game. AD was never throwing a game. The Lakers throwing a game. To you know, run from an opponent. That's not what champions do. General, like, a team that's going to win a title doesn't run from a matchup. Like, it's just not, I don't know. Like, if your goal is to win a title, if your goal, like, so, Vinay, it's funny. The Cavs did this year, right? So, they could have gotten a higher seed, and they wanted to play the Magic. So, that's what they did, I believe. I forgot which game they tanked, but they eventually slid into the 4 seed. Their goal this year is to win one round, right? They're like, we got embarrassed by Jalen Brunson last year. We got embarrassed by the Knicks. Like, we didn't look like we were ready for the playoffs. Jared Allen had the quote, "The lights were brighter than I expected," which is an insane quote for a guy making 100 plus. I think he has already signed his max deal at that point, but you just can't say that stuff out loud. Say you had a bad series. Like, saying the lights were too bright as the center hit. That's not even the main shot. Whatever. That's a separate quote. But, like, that's the Cavs' goal, so that's people kind of put that on the rug. Title contender, like, running from a team? No. And look, like, I think also what this does is gives you a lot of answers, right, to questions you would not get the answers to. Like, it'd be very hard to go into the summer and negotiations with D'Lo without a playoff run, especially a playoff run against a team like Denver. It'd be very tough to make a lot of these decisions to understand where the team's at, where Darvin Ham's at, where, you know, the coaches, whatever it is. This is a crazy situation. That's my final thing is, man, I'm excited to be in the playoffs. I'm excited to tap in again. We'll have a full Denver breakdown sometime this week. We'll get into it and really dive in. I'm going to rewatch all four of the games during this week and we'll to prepare for that. But exciting.
We'll share some notes with the listeners. Things to watch for sure. Yeah. Different things. Yeah.
Definitely. Good to be back in postseason mode. We got a couple. I'm surprised they didn't give us the Sunday game. They gave us the Saturday game, which cut a day off of rest. Like I was expecting.
Yeah.
I was hoping the Lakers got four full days. It gets cut to three. So I guess that's your gift for winning your playing game. But
yeah,
exciting to get game one started here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Lakers got a game on Saturday. I will, I hope the Lakers can maybe steal game one, game two. We'll see what happens. Because that would be really cool to come back. I might attend one of those. I might attend game three or game four. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But that we'll see how it all goes. And Roger and I will be back maybe Thursday or Friday night. We'll do another live stream where we kind of just share some of the notes that we get from our rewatches. But as always, for the folks that joined us, you can replay this back on Twitter if you want. And if you're not able to do that, I'll upload the video to Spotify and Apple, so it'll hit your feeds tonight or be there by morning. And as always, whether you're listening to this in the evening live with us now or you're listening to this during the day, we appreciate you and everything you do, whether you like, share, subscribe. And if nothing else, Lakers are the seventh seed, Raj. We have a rematch with the Denver Nuggets, and we're going to try and do the improbable. Everybody's counted this out except us, our Laker fans. So let's see if we can knock them out and shock the rest of the world. So if nothing else, we appreciate everybody for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next one. Take it easy.